This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Gretch, I know from my own experience that baby making is not always simple. There is a lack of knowledge surrounding how to get pregnant. And when you want to conceive, there can be a lack of understanding and resources. Frida Fertility is the only one-stop shop that makes it easier to make a baby with a set of solutions for everything from reproductive health to ovulation tracking to conception aid.
Frida is simplifying the journey to parenthood with products that help you go from trying to making a baby. Frida products are innovative, easy to use, and accessible, from ovulation prediction to at-home insemination kits. This is baby making simplified. Find Frida Fertility on Amazon, at Target, and select CVS stores near you. That's Frida Fertility, F-R-I-D-A, Frida Fertility.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Hello, and welcome to Happier, a podcast that gives you ideas for how to build a happier life. This week, it's a very special episode, and we are recording at the soundstage of the show that Elizabeth has been working on here in New York City. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature, and I'm here in New York City at the Silver Cup Studios in Queens, and with me is my sister, Elizabeth Kraft.
That's me, Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA, and yes, Gretch, welcome to my world.
Yes.
You're here. I've been to your world many times,
yes.
But this is one of the few times you've been to mine, and so I'm very excited to have you and Henry here visiting.
Yeah.
And experiencing for yourself what I do all the time.
Well,
I
have to say, it's so much exactly the way that I pictured it. It almost feels like a caricature of itself, because
right.
It's like, here's Elizabeth in her director's chair with her headphones on, and here's like the people walking around with like giant planks of wood, you know, painted to look like something else. Or as I walked
in, the actress with the hair done and her makeup done and a robe.
Yeah. No, exactly. Like there were these two guys carrying like what looked like a giant fake tree branch. Uh-huh. Just like walking down, you know, the thing. So it's super exciting to be here, because I visited you on location the other day, but I've never been to a soundstage, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great. This is where we come to build sets, and we have a lot more control here. So it's nice. It's a little bit more relaxed than being on location.
Yeah.
So, Gretch, throughout this episode, we'll play some clips of you wandering around and experiencing Hollywood life. On the sound stage and what's going on.
Yes. Yeah. Henry and I are going to go exploring when you're busy doing your job. We're going to like sneak around and see what's going on.
Sounds good.
Yeah, we've been walking for about 2 minutes now, and we're still like halfway between the dressing room and the sound stage.
Coming from New York City, it's huge, which to us, we're used to being in these very cramped office spaces. This thing is gigantic. It's taking us, it's like a whole city, probably two city blocks It's giant, giant, giant space.
Okay, we might have to be quiet now.
Hey, Liz, what's going on?
They're rehearsing. They're doing a marking rehearsal so that everyone knows where the actors are going to be during the scene. So we watched the rehearsal earlier, and now they're doing it for the rest of the crew.
Why are we whispering?
Because everyone's paying attention. Okay. And we're all supposed to be quiet and not doing any work and not walking or talking.
Okay.
So, Elizabeth, you have a tried this at home that's inspired by being here on the set. What is it?
Yeah. So, Gretchen, my tried this at home is let people do their job.
Ah.
And that's because here, you know, in when we are making television or movies or whatever, everyone has a very specialized job. And it's sort of, Hollywood's sort of known for that. Like the joke is that, you know, you can't move a chair,
right.
You know, on a set unless that's your job.
Right.
And it's because there's so many moving parts, there's so much going on that everyone really needs to know what their specific task is. So someone's putting up the lights, someone's putting out the props, someone's doing the set dressing. Everything is just very particular, and that's how it all works. And you can see as you walk around and see everything that's going on, if people were getting each other's space and doing each other's jobs, it would be a mass of confusion.
Yeah.
And so that's true, you know, making a TV show, but I think it's also probably more true than we realize in everyday life.
Yeah. Well, I think there's sort of a corollary to letting people do their job too, which is that if you've asked them to do a job, or if they have a job, you kind of have to accept the fact that they're going to do that job in their own way, in their own time. And you either have to, and if you want somebody else to do a job, you have to let them do it their way, or you've got to do it yourself. And I think sometimes people want to tell other people to do work, but then they also feel like they get to 100% tell them how to do that job. And they get frustrated if it's like, if you won't do it right away, even though it doesn't need to be done for a week, I want you to do it right away, so why are you delaying? Or I want you, like loading the dishwasher, something as silly as that. I know somebody who constantly like reloads the dishwasher because she says her husband loads the dishwasher wrong. I'm like, as long as the, and he yeah. She says, well, he says as long as the dishes get clean, what difference does it make? And I'm kind of like, well, I'm sort of with him.
What difference does it make?
If you want him to, like, you can load the dishwasher yourself, but if you want him to do that job, or if he said that I'm going to do that job, then you got to let him do that job.
Yeah, I also think it can really send a mixed message. Like if you're saying, I'm talking more of a work situation,
yeah.
But if you tell someone, well, send so-and-so an email about the meeting
yes.
next week, and then you go ahead and also send an email about the meeting next week, suddenly it feels like your organization is sort of like a chicken with the head running around
yeah.
with the head cut off, and it makes it seem like less professional. Even though, and it's kind of the need I think some people have to micromanage.
Yes.
And I think it can have just a negative impact on everyone, because also the other person whose job it was to send the email
yes.
feels like you don't trust them.
Yes.
And that you think they can't do it right. And
yeah.
that is, in fact, probably why you sent the email, because maybe you don't trust them.
Right. But then there's another thing that happens, which is if you constantly tell somebody to do something and then you go ahead and do it yourself, then they're not going to do it when you tell them to do it, because they're like, well, if I just wait, maybe this other person will do it and save me the trouble. And so you're actually creating a cycle of encouraging people not to do what is supposed to be their job, because they're like, well, if I just don't do, I think part of the thing, and we talked about this in the problem of shared work
yeah.
in episode 28, is that if you want people to do their share of the work, you have to allow them to do that work. You have to allow that work not to be done if they don't do it. And
right.
you have to allow them to do it in their own way. And anytime you mess with that, then you create either confusion, or you actually end up doing more, which usually then makes you feel resentful and angry.
Yeah, and it also goes into the realm of define what people's jobs are.
Yes.
You know, and I think this can be very true at home. It's like, you know, I know, for instance, in your life, Jamie does everything related to the car.
Yes.
And you do everything related, I assume, to school.
Yeah.
And so it also helps to know what your
yes.
job is.
Yes.
And then you can have a lot more confidence that it's getting done.
Yes.
Whereas if you don't have that definition, and this is, again, why it works so well
in Hollywood,
in making a TV show.
Yeah.
If you don't have that definition, then
something can easily fall through the cracks.
But then, and then also, like on the show, if something hasn't been done, it's very clear whose responsibility it was.
Yes.
And so it's like very, because the problem is like when several people can do something, often it's this case where they're like, it's not my job to answer that email and I don't exactly know what the answer is. So I'll just hope that someone else responds, and then no one responds. But here's the funny thing from the world of dog training, because, you know, we were trying to step up our game with Barnaby, which means people training. He's very well trained. We are not very well trained. So we were practicing touch, which is when they come touch your hand, which is a super useful thing. And
what is that?
Oh, so touch is like you hold out your hand and you say like, Barnaby, touch. And then he's supposed to come and put his nose to your hand.
Wow.
And when he does that, then that's like, oh, that's what he was supposed to do. And that's good because like if you need to grab their collar or something like that, it makes them get, they're not just coming near you, they're actually touching your hand.
Got it.
And the trainer was saying like, you've got to give a dog a good 10 seconds. So, because I was like, well, sometimes he does and sometimes he doesn't. And she said, well, maybe you're not giving him time. Like maybe, and like I've tried that since, and like sometimes he'll kind of look at me for like a good 3 or 4 seconds, like, I don't know if I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, he's like, well, I guess I will. And then he comes, but it's like, she's like, but a lot of times people are like, touch, touch. And then they get frustrated. And it's like, you just got to give him time to like comply.
Wow. So and the same goes for other people and their jobs. We all need to give each other time to get our stuff done.
Yeah. It's just like, let somebody do their job. Well, maybe you want it done tomorrow, but they don't think, but it's not actually due till Monday. Well, you'd like to know that it's done today, but they could do it by Friday. Like, give them their time to do their job.
Yeah. You know, Gretch, before I knew that everyone had their job and to let this all go when I was a much younger writer, just getting to, you know, be comfortable on set.
Yeah.
You know, when you watch a TV show, of course, you cut from this actor to that actress and back and all of that. I didn't know how it worked. And so I found myself like, running up to the director being like, well, we can't see this person's face.
Oh, right.
You know, thinking it was my job to like point out that we'd shot this scene, but we hadn't seen this person's face. And then they're like, yeah, because we haven't turned around yet. Like, I'll make sure that I get their face. You know what I mean? So it was like, that's when I realized, oh, okay, somebody is in charge of this kind of thing.
Right.
And I don't have to worry about it.
Right.
But I thought it was my job to make sure that we saw everyone's face. And in fact, of course, that's all they do every day is make sure that everybody can be seen.
Well, this was something that was when I was visiting you on the on location that was amazing to me. I didn't realize like they'll do a scene like 12, 14 times. And they'll, and like this time it's sort of like focusing on this person, and this time it's focusing on that person, and this time it's like it's a wide shot. I didn't realize.
Yeah, that, and there's people who just keep track of, okay, what have we seen? What have we not seen yet?
Right.
So I'm curious, tell us if you've had this issue in your life, either if you've had a boss who doesn't let you do your job or if you struggle, as some of us do, with letting other people do their jobs.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
Yeah. Email us at podcast@gretchenrubin.com, Twitter, Facebook, or always you can go to happiercast.com. This is happiercast.com/60 because this is our very special episode 60.
Okay, tell me what's going on now.
Well, right now we're walking to Craft Services, which is the bane of my existence on set.
Say what Craft Services is.
Craft Services is a, it's basically where they just have all this food, and it's usually like candy, chips. You can see the chocolate sauce out or something.
Yeah. If the show got picked up, would you maybe be working in New York?
I'm not writing in New York, but we would come back and forth. So I'd be here quite often. I could do some podcast recording. we would come, you know, periodically.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
I like how within eyesight right now I can see like a pile of rainbow assortment of paints.
Yeah.
Like a place called a walkie-talkie charging station, which has like 20 charging walkie-talkies. And a bunch of black and white cookies. It's just a real assortment of stuff here. What time did you wake up today?
Not that early, 6:30. We didn't have to call today till 8 a.m. But other days we've had 6 and 6:30 a.m. So 8 felt very late.
Now all the lights just went out. What's that about?
Let's go look and see. Let's go look and see if they're ready to shoot.
Okay.
Walk back over.
In the Larry Sanders Show, there's a thing in the opening where Hank says, "This is exciting, isn't it?" And that's how I feel, because it's very exciting.
We're on in 10 seconds, so get ready to have a good time. All right, here we go. This is exciting, isn't it?
We all know that our life and our health can be improved when we eat nourishing, healthy meals, but it can be hard to maintain. With Sunbasket Meal Kits, it's easy because they take care of the details. Sunbasket offers 18 chef-crafted, dietitian-approved recipes each week with options like Mediterranean, carb-conscious, vegetarian, and keto-friendly. The recipes are quick and easy to follow, and you can enjoy a meal full of organic produce and clean ingredients that's ready in 30 minutes or less.
Try mouthwatering Sunbasket dishes like salmon burgers with lemon dill mayo and seared squash, or steaks with chimichurri and harissa roasted sweet potatoes. My son Jack loves salmon, and he loves the Sunbasket salmon burgers. Go to sunbasket.com/happier today to get $45 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/happier to get $45 off your first box plus free shipping. All right, and we are back, Gretchen, with Helen Childress, who I've had the pleasure of working with for the last several weeks. It feels like years at this point. Hi, Helen.
Hey, Liz. Hi, Gretchen.
Now, I have to introduce Helen by telling everyone that not only has she written this pilot, which I'll tell you about in a second, but she also wrote one of my favorite movies, Reality Bites, which is a total seminal movie for anyone anywhere around our age, anyone who's a Gen Xer, this defined being a Gen Xer, starring Ethan Hawke, Winona Ryder, Ben Stiller, all when they were really young. It's a fantastic movie, and here's a clip.
You know, you're very beautiful. I mean, seriously, you're...
I'm not really good with compliments. are you religious?
I guess I'm a non-practicing Jew.
Hey, I'm a non-practicing virgin.
Helen, you want to say a little bit about what this pilot's about?
Sure. This pilot takes place in 1977. It's about the modeling world in 1977 in New York City.
Yeah, and it doesn't have a title yet, which is why we're not saying what the title is. But should it go to series and have a title, we'll be plugging that, of course.
Yeah.
Okay, so Helen, I have to ask you, because you know I'm obsessed with Reality Bites, and I've been grilling you about it somewhat. But I have to ask, I mean, that movie came out when you were 23 years old.
Oh, actually, I started writing it while I was still in college at USC when I was 20. And I found I could not keep up with my courses and write the screenplay at the same time. So, and since my major was, at the time it was called filmic writing, which we always joked we should call it McWriting, because it was like writing for the screen. So I actually had to, I guess dropped out my senior year. I feel silly and funny saying that. I did drop out my senior year.
So you dropped out of a program in film writing in order to write a film? That seems legit.
I know. I felt it was legit. Now I go, maybe I should have gotten the degree. But I stopped and started working professionally. And I was 20 when I started writing it. And then I was 23 when it got made. So I did write it for 3 years. And then I was 24 when it came out. So it was still, I look back, I thought I was old at the time. But now I look back and I go, oh my God, I mean, I watched the movie and it's almost kind of embarrassing. It's like reading your diary from when you were a teenager is what it feels like. And I'm like, oh, it's kind of cringe. You know what I mean? Kind of cringe inducing a little bit. But
that's why it's so good, because it is, it's so much like that for every single person who sees it.
Well, I don't think I could have written it at an older age. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I had to be of that age to write it, because it felt so real to me as I was writing it, just writing about my own experiences and my friends. and really not being, in a way, mature enough to have a censor. Like, it was really looking at your life. Because at that young of an age, you don't have much of a biography to draw from yet. I mean, not biography, but you haven't had a lot of experience. And I don't think I had the skill set to sort of make things up and structure them outright. I couldn't fictionalize it. So I was just using really stuff that happened to me or stuff that happened to my friends. So it is, I mean, I don't think I could. It's almost embarrassing how much it wears its heart on its sleeve in a way. It's one of those things that you had to write in the moment.
You know, Gretchen and I talk about happiness and good habits. And a lot of times we talk about stumbling blocks and things that keep you from being happy. My question is, having that kind of success in your early 20s,
yeah,
do you feel like that's and it caused you any unhappiness? Like, it was sort of like, oh my God, like that's as big as it gets almost. And then you're just sort of, I mean, does it mess with your head to have that at such a young age?
I think it does in a certain way. I think it's really hard for, I don't think I realized that it messed with my head till later. I couldn't even really imagine that level of success. And so I just honestly kind of fought against it. I didn't want to move out of the apartment we were in. I didn't want to accept the change, you know, that was happening. So a lot of it was trying to, I guess you'd say, stay real, you know, or yeah. I didn't want to get disconnected from, in a way, my source. Do you know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? Like, I was afraid of losing the ability to write. Like, I was afraid of getting sort of sucked in by success. Mm. And so I fought against it really hard. In fact, after it came out, I was like, well, I'm not going to screenwrite anymore. I'm going to do poetry now. And so I took like 2 years off just to write poetry, which I look back on it, I go, what was I thinking? But I felt like I just didn't want to lose what had allowed me to write it in the first place, which I felt like doing all some kind of blind picture deals and going on and just being fabulous and whatever would completely disconnect me from the whatever it was. It's the impetus to write and create just for the sake of creating artistically and not being commercially minded about it. So I sort of had a battle with myself, I guess, for a few years. And then I guess decided, hey, we should probably get a house someday. So, maybe I should accept the career. Uh-huh. And I actually did find it hard to jump back in.
And so another thing we talk about a lot is habits and sort of what are people's habits of work, of their work pace. So like, how do they stay creative? How do they stay productive? So what kind of habits do you have?
You know, that's such a good question because I wish I had a habits that I could formalize, you know, that I was like, okay, so at 9 I start, and then I go sit outside for 30 minutes and then I come in.
Yeah.
But what I find is that almost all of my, I guess, habits or all of my, what I do is it's intuition based. It's like, just for some reason I'll write for, let's say, 2 days and then I'll go, you know what I need to do today? Even though there's a deadline at 4, I need to go to Costco right now. And you know what I mean? And buy a log of goat cheese or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's just kind of following intuition, I guess.
But like, so are you doing that in the spirit of procrastination, or are you doing it that like there's something about it that's somehow feeding your creativity in a way that's not linear?
Gretchen, I really don't know. I wish I did. But I know that like I try to listen to, because what happens is then I'll go like, I'll fight with myself. Like, I know I shouldn't, let's say, go to Costco.
Right.
But then, or wherever. Or I know I shouldn't take a walk or do this other thing. But then what I often find almost every time is I'll do that other thing. And then I'll end up having a conversation with someone. Or I'll end up picking up a magazine or a book and going, oh my God. I mean, even just this morning, I was like, I know I shouldn't do the New York Times crossword. I should probably be reading these scripts that whatever. But then I opened it up to the crossword and right by it was an article about a book that had just come out about like life in 1980 in New York. And I was like, oh, I should read that. So a lot of times like that happens.
Right.
And I don't know what that's about. I just feel like if I follow kind of what I want to do, if I eventually just, it'll all come around.
It pays off in some way that maybe you couldn't predict, but it ends up being useful in some way.
Yeah, you get some kind of material. And it happens every time when I get stuck.
And do you write, would you write like for like an hour or 2 or 3 hours of stretch, or like once you get going, you'll go for 6 hours, or like what's your typical, or how do you manage getting ideas? And I mean,
I would say two things to that. One is, I always tell my husband I can't get much done in 3 hours, but I can get a lot done in 3.5 hours.
Mm.
Because there's 3 hours that are spent tearing your hair out. And then in that last 20 minutes, you're like, oh my gosh, I figured it out. I went to a special high school that had it was an arts high school, but they had it was in Houston. It was called High School for the Performing Visual Arts. And they had a division that was just for,
we're being called to stage. You want to get it?
Do we need to go?
Break. 1 second.
They asked me to let you know that they're about to start second team rehearsal.
Okay. Oh, I can finish real fast.
Yeah. Do you want me to wait until the first teamers come in to mention them?
So I went to the special high school where they had a writing program, and we had a man who became the poet laureate, Robert Pinsky, came to talk to us, and they asked, one of the students asked him, what inspires you? And he said, what inspires him oftentimes is other art, meaning he'll read Chekhov and know that he'll never be that good, and that inspires him. So often what I do when I get stuck is I just start reading Aaron Sorkin, Patty, any kind of great screenwriting. And that, it's not that I copy it, but it, like, you want to be that good. You know what I mean? So it inspires you to try.
That's interesting, because sometimes people feel like they shouldn't do that because then they worry that they will copy. But you don't worry about copying. Right.
It's not like you literally copy it, but you can, I find that I can oftentimes mimic it and put my own spin on it. And it's super inspiring to read something that's really good like that.
Okay, so Helen, we always ask our guests for a try this at home. Do you have a try this at home for people who are aspiring writers?
My advice for aspiring writers would be to write longhand, to get a pencil and a notepad.
I cannot do that. My handwriting is so bad.
As long as you can read it.
Yeah,
you know,
I guess that's right. Right.
Because I feel like that is, especially when you're stuck, like definitely writing at the typewriter is great when you're in a rush, you need to get something done or whatever. But if you're really trying to think of ideas, oftentimes I find that, you know, it's the stuff that you wrote down in the margins, the little doodles and stuff like that, that you think, oh, that's nothing. And then you go back later and go, oh my gosh. In fact, on this pilot, I did that a lot. And so I think writing in longhand is a great way to bypass sort of your own censor. It's literally coming through your body. You know what I mean? Except for the pencil, I guess, but you're controlling it. So I really feel like that and listening to music are, honestly, those are like two kind of triggers, I guess, that really help. And also just not forcing it.
All right, we are about to get called back to stage.
Yeah.
So we're going to end this. Thank you, Helen, for being here.
Yeah, it was fantastic to get a chance to talk to you.
Thank you, Gretchen. This was really great.
Okay, so this is Video Village. This is where we have a couple of monitors showing us what's going to be filmed.
Gretchen, can you describe what's behind you?
So it's like a giant mural of a cityscape of New York City.
This was an apartment, and then we had the trans light up, or the trans light behind us, you see, was the city skyline.
Wow.
So we shot into the apartment, and then it was reflecting on the glass. And it looked really, really pretty. It looked great. Too bad you guys missed that. That was fun.
Is that an actor behind you?
It's an extra. Featured extra.
Cool.
Yeah. Dressed in 70s clothes because the show takes place in 1977.
Can you say that?
I can say that, yeah.
Wait, what's the difference between being an extra and being a featured extra?
I'm not exactly sure, but the featured extra is like
They do something.
You really see their face. They have got direction. Whereas an extra is just kind of in the background.
Crowd
scene.
How do you feel on set? Are you like anxious right now? Are you relaxed? Is this your zone?
I would be totally relaxed if we weren't doing this. I'm anxious because I'm not normally walking around with a microphone and everyone's like, what are they doing?
But nobody seems particularly phased, I have to say.
I'm much more relaxed in the writer's room because this is not my milieu.
Are you like head honcho here?
One of the head honchos, yes. Yeah, hopefully no one will yell at me here. But they could. Sometimes, like, you know, people don't care and they just yell at you anyway. I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for ways for my son to get involved and give back in our local community. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Student Visionaries of the Year, a campaign by Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, the largest nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a world without blood cancers.
Student Visionaries of the Year is a 7-week philanthropic leadership development program for high school students. Participants form strong teams and fundraise in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor in their local community. This program is transformative. It not only helps students develop valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship, not to mention it looks great on college applications, but most importantly, is also a chance for them to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on blood cancer patients and their families. You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students.